Hey, what goes on out there in Sharkland? This is Eric from the Shark School with another episode of Let's Talk Shark. I'm still here in Fiji. So this podcast again comes from the Becca Lagoon Resort. A tremendous place, actually, if you really want to see some sharks, some big ones with bull sharks, tiger sharks, you name it. So it's actually a very, very incredible place to do shark work. Today's episode will be on shark feeding and conditioning. Shark feeding sometimes gets a really bad rap because a lot of people think if you feed a shark, then you condition the shark. And if you don't feed the shark anymore, he gets pissed. And what happens is sometimes the shark then just swims off and bites people elsewhere on a beach, surfers, whatever. So a lot of people who are afraid of sharks or just don't like shark feeding, they say there's a correlation between bites and the conditioning of sharks. Well, what's the answer on this? It's totally wrong. It does not happen that way. So first of all, we have to get an idea what conditioning truly is. When we talk sharks, we talk about the classical conditioning, or it's also called the Pavlovian conditioning. You may have heard of Pavlov. He was the guy who figured out that if he rang a bell, right, before he feed a dog, then the dog started to produce some saliva. And he then got rid of the food part, but the shark still produced saliva once he heard the sound. So that would be Pavlovian conditioning. But, you know, there are some other conditionings, like it's called, for example, forward conditioning, simultaneous conditioning, backward conditioning, what else? Temporal conditioning, second order conditioning. So you see, there's a lot of different conditionings out there. But when it comes to sharks, it's a simple, straightforward issue. The shark associates being fed with the approach of a boat, with the sound in this case, or the person jumping in, positioning himself. These are what the sharks then would relate to while I'm now getting fed. But the problem we face here is that people, and again, assume that once you stop feeding a shark, the shark then gets impatient or even aggressive and would then swim elsewhere and punish someone else. And that is just not realistic. And honestly, the sharks will need an incredible brain power to actually make this association. So on one side, people afraid of sharks try to portray these animals as stupid animals that you can easily manipulate. And if you then don't feed them anymore, well, this is how they react. But if we look at the whole scenario, first the shark has to learn that a sound of a boat or a diver in the water is feeding him. Once he understands that, then he also has to understand and know that what a person is. So a diver definitely looks completely different than a swimmer. So, but nevertheless, the shark would have to make the association that what sits in this suit is the same thing that actually swims at the surface. And honestly, that is a very, very complex train of thought, and it's just not possible. So what really happens when you stop feeding a shark? Well, you feed the shark every day for months, two, three, whatever, and the shark still stays there. Then you stop it, so the shark will come back the next day and the day after, and then sooner or later, he will not come any other day. He may then come back any 3-4 days, and sooner or later, the shark won't appear anymore at all. And there is something else. A lot of times when you feed some sharks, it's always the same animals. They actually stick around. So if they stick around for a longer period of time, that means they always have to stay within the vicinity of an area that they can reach the feeding station in no time. So if you don't have 10 kilometers, 10 miles off that feeding site a bite, that is very, very unlikely that this is the same, that it would be the same shark that has half the same territory. So right there, you have another problem. But Nevertheless, it is a political issue if you allow shark feeding or not. And I remember it was 2001. We had here in Pensacola Beach, we had a young boy. His name was Jesse Arbica, still his name. And he got bitten by a shark. And it was a very nasty incident. The boy lost his arm. He was clinically dead for a few minutes. But lucky him, they reattached the arm. But yeah, of course, he was dead for more than 7 minutes. And of course, he did not really recover. So he still has a lot of problems. But this was the very case that people who want to ban shark feeding in Florida actually used. I remember there was a hearing going on in Jacksonville, and everybody had could say a few words, was open mic, and of course the proponents of this ban, well, they just use Jesse left and right. And I can understand that. But my thing was that the bite on Jesse was not related to any shark feeding, because in our area, Pensacola, there was no shark feeding whatsoever. The shark was lured in through fishermen. We could prove it. There were fishermen involved, but that didn't help. So I remember one of these people on the panel, when I came up and talked to them, I said, look, you can ban shark feeding in Florida, but the following year, that would be 2002, you will not have a drop in shark bites. Of course, I got ridiculed. Well, what else was new? But a year later, end of 2002, I saw the same people again on another issue, and I said, so, okay, so I was right. You did not lower the bite rate, so can we now take the ban off the table and start feeding sharks again? So their answer was no, now it's in effect, so we leave it at that. So no one really wants to admit that it's not a fact. It's not right. It's not correct, whatever. That if you start feeding a shark, if you start feeding sharks or then stop feeding them, will increase the bite rate anywhere. Shark feeding is really big business. Currently worldwide, there's a number floating around that over 200 operators actually are shark feeding. So in an ideal world, well, we would not need shark feeding, but unfortunately, we don't live in an ideal world. And in order to see sharks, most of the time, you really have to put in some food to get them closer. Sharks hang out in reefs where we dive, but they hardly come closer because there is not really anything that really attracts them. Yes, we sound sometimes like a struggling fish, but that's about it. So if you really want to have sharks up close and personal, you have to give them something, a scent. So nothing really wrong with creating a scent as long as you do it in a conscious manner, you know exactly what you're doing, and you do not disrupt their natural hierarchies. And that is a big problem, because in early years, I remember hand feeding and pole feeding was pretty much Ian. So both methods of feeding are wrong. Why? Because it's the diver, the feeder, who decides, okay, this shark now gets some food, this shark does not get food. But in the shark's hierarchy, it may have been completely different. So that does not really work well if you have more than one species, even if it's a single species and you have plenty of animals. So we should leave it up to the sharks to really work out their own hierarchy. Then, of course, you have the use of chainmail suits. I mean, what's up with this? A chainmail suit is, come on, if you really are such a daredevil, you know, like I'm a shark male suit, you know, I feed these ferocious predators, and hello, get rid of that damn suit and just use your swimsuit and show that these animals are harmless. And I've been on some of these dives, and then you got the intro, the dive briefing, and the handler said, the feeder said, look, these animals are not dangerous. So don't worry about it, nothing's going to happen. And then he puts on a chainmail suit. And I remember I asked one of these guys, so if you really believe they're not dangerous, so why putting up a chainmail suit? And he did a little stuttering, and he could not really answer. So point is, if you really want to feed a shark, I don't support it, but if you really don't want to feed a shark, do it in a regular dive suit or in a swimsuit, because anything else gives out the wrong message. So, are there actually methods that are suitable? Yeah, there are. So, for example, we call it simulated carcass feeding. What we do is we put an iron grid into a bucket, put around a lot of fish in that bucket, then fill it up with fresh water, put it in a freezer. So when you then want to do the feeding, you just dump this food ball, we also call it a chumsicle, like popsicle, chumsicle, and let the shark have it, and they create their own hierarchy. You can swim around, and the sharks just assume, most likely that's what they assume, that we are there for the same reason. So there is really nothing wrong with this method. It's basically, you know, whenever you have, let's say, a large animal that died, a whale or whatever, you have several sharks showing up, and they create their own hierarchy. They feed whenever they feel like, or they push each other off and things like that. So they create their own hierarchy. So if we simulate that, well, then it's everything is okay. But unfortunately, there is no law out there how you have to feed sharks. And that's some really big problem. I mentioned these over 200 operators. And what does really qualify an operator to go shark feeding? Nothing. Just because a diver is in the water and in the same water are sharks doesn't make you an expert. So I really push for licenses. Everybody has to get to class. They have to do an exam and to have their operation tested. And the feasibility, and the operator has to know about all the potential species they lure in. So what I really want to see out there is that the operator works as a catalyst between divers who have never seen sharks and, of course, showing them the animals. And that's what it should be. But unfortunately, there are plenty, and I know some of them, plenty of operators out there that couldn't care less about the sharks. The sharks is just the issue. The sharks just, they use the shark or abuse the shark in some cases to make money. Nothing wrong with making money, but if you have wild animals involved, at least treat the animals with dignity and with respect. And this is sometimes a thing I cannot see that these people are doing. And, you know, the white shark diving with the cages comes to mind, where the bait is just pulled over the cage, the shark bites into the cage. What message is that? Yeah, definitely not the message we want to spread, that white sharks, in this case, are harmless animals. I mean, all the sharks are harmless. What's dangerous is the situations we create. And when you create a situation with sharks and with food, you should know exactly what you do, how you do it, and of course, why. So whenever a diver jumps in, you want to give him all the best knowledge prior to encounter these animals. And yeah, I hope in due time, operators have to take an exam, have to learn, because overall, all we want to do is protect sharks. I'm in for conservation protection of sharks, as the next guy. But we cannot do that if we don't really try to show the true side of these animals. So whenever you go shark diving or plan to shark dive, check out the operator. See how he presents himself. If he's very flashy, you know, no one gets closer to sharks like we do. We are the best, we're the greatest. Yeah, make a big circle around this operator and go elsewhere. So, okay. I hope you have now a little idea about shark feeding. So, yeah, let's tune in next time for another episode of Let's Talk Shark. Have a great day. And if you meet a shark out there, have fun, enjoy the moment, and remember, it is a privilege.